This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
This is a three-way debate. Mike Conti, Jason Lee, Ben Starnes, and we're going to vote first to see if we've swayed your decisions or swayed your opinions on how you would do this. So this is the question here. What is your preferred treatment for the abdominal aortic aneurysm with short anatomic necks outside all FDA-approved device IFUs? Are you a snorkel chimney person? Are you a fenestrated repair person? Or do you just make an incision and do it the old-fashioned way? So go ahead and take a vote there. Okay, let's see what we got. All right, 58% open. So Jason Lee and Ben Starnes got some persuading to do.
You guys put me to work today. Okay. Three-way debate. Still happy to take disclosures. Off-label use of devices. Oh, these are two esteemed professors, people I've looked up to my entire career, people I've followed my entire career. I've interviewed with them at numerous times for fellowship, residency, job, etc. So I'm just the kid on the block here to do this. But who can you really trust? This guy? Wow, what happened here? And I don't even know how I got this picture. Actually, I think I took the picture. And then, Mike, it's a little harder. Straight-laced Boston guy, New Englander, I tried and I made some phone calls. Couldn't really find anything. So what do I do? Like what a Bay Area person does? He goes to Google. You type in Michael Conti. Look what comes up. I think these are all shades of Mike Conti. And in fact, I think it's these two that particularly represent Dr. Conti. Who can you really trust? Just keep that in mind when you do the post-vote. Okay, so obviously the last 8 years, significant referral patterns have changed. Many people in the audience have been very helpful and generous in sending patients over, and we've sorted out a handful of things. So obviously for our complex EVAR protocol at Stanford, we've now done 70 juxtarenal snorkel cases since 2009. Since the commercial fenestrated Z-Fen device was available, 56 of those, 15 double barrel sandwich, 27 iliac branch cases, those 10 in the trials I talked about, 17 periscope branch T-VARs, and 7 homemade fenestrated, which we abandoned after we realized we weren't going to write the IDE for it. So 150 to 175 complex cases. Everybody knows what the snorkel chimney, the idea is a parallel graft alongside the main body endoprosthesis in order to preserve a flow into a covered branch. Credit where credit is due. The late Roy Greenberg was the first one to coin this phrase when he was trying to raise the bifurcation, when he was trying to pinch a few millimeters off on the regular device. The Malmo group talked about using more covered stents for this. And in fact, the group here wrote about snorkel and chimney encroachment and made some definitions in some keen observations back in 2005, 2006. Everybody acknowledged this really should be a bailout emergent scenario. Taking all this into consideration, I took the approach that perhaps we could apply this in a uniform fashion to elective cases if thought out well and obviously in some sort of IRB-approved study. So since 2009, we launched into tracking these sort of as closely as possible. This was a paper from the Western Vascular a couple years ago documenting the first 30. We've had, in the 70 patients, 98% technical success, 2.9% 30-day mortality, 96% primary patency out to a mean of 29 months at this point, with the longest gentleman being 62 months out. Survival, 89% at 1 year, 83% at 2 years. Now, what are my opponents going to try to convince you of? That there's no data and there's concerns about patency and second interventions and renal function. I was just going to try to let you know that all this stuff is coming and that I think that it's so far, if this really would have been a terrible scenario, it would have been abandoned. This is next week at the American Surgical. I've put together the worldwide registry of snorkel grafts This is kind of embargoed, but I'll fill you in on it, and probably just a handful of you will be in San Diego next week. 898 chimney grafts placed in 517 patients worldwide, 692 renal arteries, 156 SMAs, 50 celiacs, 94% patency out to a 23-month follow-up, 5.7% type 1 endo leak, 2-year survival, 79%. Just kind of remember those vague numbers. So that's the concern about lack of numbers, lack of data. It's coming. It's a new technology. It's something that has not been around that long. Gutters. Many people are working on trying to figure out what the optimal thing with the gutter leaks have been. Interestingly, observationally, the gutters seem to go away. So while there is a reasonable type 1 endo leak rate, we have some data in our 70 patients that at the one-year follow-up, 80% of those first three-month gutters wind up disappearing. And in fact, there's a lot of in vitro studies to look at how to optimize the seal, you know, as well as using different main body endografts to try to optimize the gutter seal. What has our data been? Of the patency of the renals, 96% overall primary patency, 6 occluded renals, 1 that occurred post-op that was rescued, 1 that was asymptomatic at a month follow-up, 2 at 3 months, 1 of which was rescued, 1 at 6 months asymptomatic, and 1 we had recently a 2-year follow-up that was able to be rescued for a 98% secondary patency. Second intervention, 7.1% for the 3 renals that we had to rescue, 1 type 3 endo leak and 1 proximal type 1 endo leak treated simply by getting back into the snorkels, raising it higher, and putting an additional one into, putting it up into the SMA. People are concerned about renal function and saying that folks are not sort of writing about this, so we decided to take this by the horns and just show what our renal function was in our series. This was from last year's Western Vascular. There was concern about renal function, so we decided to follow these as closely as possible. We have tracked data based on the way that the nephrologists like to follow, which is this rifle criteria, in terms of different stages of decline, and compared it to each of the published literature about what my debate opponents are going to talk about. This is the open transperitoneal juxtarenal AAA open repair, 37% overall acute renal dysfunction, 4.1% on dialysis. Of the ones that have renal dysfunction, half are in the lowest level, which is 25 to 50% GFR decline. In our snorkel series, this series included the first 47 patients, 32% overall acute renal dysfunction, 2.3% dialysis, more than two-thirds at the lowest level of renal function decline. Sort of allegedly the Masters, Cambria, the Mass General open juxtarenal experience, 46-month follow-up, 8.5 incidents, perioperative, 2% on dialysis, 19% of patients at latest follow-up with chronic kidney disease, 5% on dialysis. Obviously, we don't have the long-term follow-up yet. 9% incidents perioperative by the same definitions using creatinine greater than 0.5 jump or serum creatinine greater than 1.5, 2.3% on dialysis, 23% of patients at latest follow-up with chronic kidney disease, none that have reverted to dialysis in our series. This is a very interesting paper from Joe Mills looking at open repair and standard infrarenal EVAR and renal function decline on a Kaplan-Meier curve. Even standard EVAR has significant renal function decline. We're already working on patients with problems. This is just standard, and this is the same table, the same Kaplan-Meier freedom from renal function decline for our snorkel series. So again, comparable to infrarenal open and infrarenal EVAR. What about fenestrated grafts that Dr. Starnes is going to talk about? Increase in creatinine greater than 2 or 30% increase over baseline in 15 to 25-month follow-up for the only published stuff on renal function decline, 22% incidence renal function, renal dysfunction, 93% branch patency, snorkel EVAR, 30% renal dysfunction, 95% branch vessel patency compared to when you look at a larger group. Obviously, Ben's going to show some Cleveland Clinic data, single center series, again, perhaps highlighting that in, you know, centers of excellence, you can get equivalent results. How about now that ZFEN's approved? They'll probably point at, well, if this was so good, then why did you sort of adopt ZFEN? And this is what our numbers have been, just to be clear. Since ZFEN got approved, the number of snorkels has tailed off, and obviously the rise, and so I've done 56 commercial ZFENs. But who are the patients we can't do? And this is what we have to remember. This 81-year-old male, prior TVAR, 7.5 centimeter aneurysm, short neck, 32. I had to order the device. I waited 3 to 4 weeks. He came in ruptured a week after I ordered the device, died. This is a nearly 10-centimeter aneurysm with a short neck. I used a device that was planned for somebody else, but still, at that point, had to adopt some sort of chimney strategy in order to get all of the vessels revascularized, because the device I happened to have on the side was a single scallop, single hole. And that's what that looks like afterwards. And then the double-angled ones with the SMA at the same level is prohibitive for the commercially available fenestrated right now. So you wind up having to build an off-label fenestrated, and typically that will involve some sort of snorkel or chimney graft. And then one last one, we ordered a device just like Ben had shown with his homemade IDE or his PMEG, small access, couldn't get a device up. Snorkeled a trivascular device. So in summary, on-label use of ZFEN if feasible. If not feasible, very low threshold for snorkel chimney. Neck angulation and anatomic limitations make the ZFEN somewhat problematic. The wait time and access to the iliacs. So I say vote yes for snorkels, and I welcome my opponents. Thanks. Straight from Mardi Gras, Dr. Ben Starnes to present fenestrated grafts.
Thank you, Jason. And again, I stand before this highly intelligent audience to describe the fenestrated repair and why it should be the repair that every patient with a juxtarenal aneurysm receives. These are my disclosures. They haven't changed. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about a 15-millimeter infrarenal neck for most commercially available endografts. On November 18th of last year, I had the opportunity to have dinner with one of my heroes and with one of the heroes of many people in the crowd. And I asked Dr. Perotti, I said, how did we come up with that 15 millimeters as the minimum required neck length? And his response was, Ben, it was completely arbitrary. We asked vascular surgeons how much infrarenal aortic neck they would be willing to sew to in an open repair, and they uniformly replied, well, the clamp is about 7 or 8 millimeters in width, and so about twice that. Yeah, 14 to 16 millimeters. That's about what we needed. Well, this is 15 millimeters, and this should seal in your frontal lobe right now, a coffee bean. It is the length of a coffee bean. Really? Is that what we're expecting these devices to seal in for 10 to 15 to even 20 years? Well, here's my first opponent. Does this guy really look like he knows what he's doing? And does he even wash his hands or take his wedding band off for when he scrubs into procedures? I don't even think he knows what he's looking at here. Looks confused. And here's my other opponent, a highly professional person, very well respected, and I'm really concerned at the moment. I'm very concerned. Both of these gentlemen are master debaters. Master debaters. They're both very good master debaters. This is Dr. Jason Lee, my first opponent. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is the world literature on long-term outcomes of snorkels and chimneys. Okay, that was pretty easy. So now on to my second opponent, Dr. Michael Conti. This is Dr. Conti standing out in front of UCSF. There's the water fountain there. And what Dr. Conti, my more formidable opponent, is going to say is he's going to say that fenestrated EVAR isn't durable. He's going to say that the kidneys are at risk with fenestrated EVAR, and he's not going to talk about open complications. He's going to tell you that none of his patients die with open surgery or have any complications. Do not, ladies and gentlemen, trust this man. This is the study that I go to when I compare endovascular versus open repair. It's the OVER trial, the VA study with long-term comparison of endovascular versus open repair for abdominal aortic aneurysms. And what you see here, ladies and gentlemen, is that the risk of death is 6 times higher with an open repair compared with an endovascular repair. 6 times the risk of in-hospital death with a highly significant p-value. This intelligent audience would clearly see the results of that. And my late friend Roy Greenberg always said that fit the device to the aorta, to the healthy aorta. When Jason brought up that series of pararenal aneurysms treated with fenestrated techniques and showed the high incidence of renal failure, this was a lesson that Dr. Greenberg learned over a decade ago. Well, let's look at some long-term data from the Cleveland Clinic, initial experience with renal branches. Early, 15 years ago, 2001 to 2006, nearly 300 patients with fenestrated and branched endografts looking at 518 renal artery stents, 287 bare metal stents and 231 covered stents. What did they find out? And this is published data in the Journal of Vascular Surgery. Renal occlusion, 4% with bare metal stents, 2% with covered stents. When you look at the difference in freedom from occlusion, there is no difference in uncovered versus covered stents. However, in covered stents, freedom from stenosis was much better. These are lessons that we learned over a decade ago. When we look at freedom from secondary intervention of these renal stents, you can see this is data published from Tara Mastrassi. The 30-day freedom from secondary intervention, 98%. 1 year, 94%. 5 year, nearly 90%. And no factor showed association with an increased risk for reintervention. Here is our experience with 4.5 years of data from the University of Washington, 168 fenestrated EVARs, 67 of those patients in a very controlled environment of an IDE under the umbrella with data points on every single time point, very rigorous data collection. Our mean seal zone, ladies and gentlemen, was not 15 millimeters. It was 4.8 centimeters. And what we've learned is that when you get that 5 centimeters of seal, you have much, much, much better results. Our renal artery patency is 100%. We had one patient that had a renal stent separation that was treated with a simple reintervention. Our sac shrinkage, 96%. Aneurysm-related reintervention rate, 10%, one of the lowest quoted in the literature. Our renal reintervention rate, only 1.4% out of 134 renal arteries intervened upon. We only had 2 patients that we had to reintervene. Stent graft migration, renal stent fracture, renal artery stenosis, 0, 0, 0. These are incredible results. So, on my advanced directives for my juxtarenal aneurysm, if I'm unconscious, fix my juxtarenal aneurysm with a fenestrated endovascular technique, please, and use a covered stent. But make sure the surgeon knows what he is doing. And make sure the planning is absolutely perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, they are not telling you the truth. Do not trust these two men. You can only trust me. Thank you.
It's a really tough act to follow. So having to follow these two very innovative and highly polished and skillful debaters. I am not going to show any slides of either of them. That's my first rule. Okay, I'm going to show you how to sleep well at night. I don't know how these guys sleep worrying about all these people out there with their CT scans and their evolving aneurysms that are partially treated, but I like to sleep well at night and so do my patients, so I have no disclosures for this talk. We've already heard a lot today about the continued evolution of endovascular repair and what it's brought to our patients. Suprarenal fixation, improved flexibility of grafts, larger diameter grafts to treat patients with larger necks, smaller caliber delivery systems for percutaneous EVAR, and now we're talking a lot today in this session about things like fenestration, snorkels, and chimneys, hybrid procedures, and of course branch grafts people like Dr. Shooter have really developed. But just to remind everybody, for most patients, this is actually a curable disease. If I wanted to have people in remission, I would have gone into oncology. So let's try to remember that technical feasibility, while exciting, needs to be matched by clinical success for a disease that is largely curable for most patients of average risk. And so of these things, in terms of this debate, the things that we're really looking at here that relate to juxtarenal and short necks are larger diameter grafts, fenestrations, snorkels, and chimneys, hybrid procedures, and debranching, and branch grafts. And here's the enemy here. It's clearly an aneurysm that's right up at the level of the renal arteries where the aorta is degenerated, filled with thrombus, and dilated. So what do we do in these cases? So just in way of definitions, a lot of words get thrown around. It gets a little confusing. For me, a juxtarenal aneurysm extends right up to, but not including the renal arteries. It may get right to the inferior edge. Pararenal involves the renal arteries, but in some papers, it's jumbled together with juxtarenal aneurysms. Suprarenal is anything above the renals. Paravisceral really involves the SMA and celiac and, of course, type 4 thoracos. So there are lots of relative indications still for open repair, including several on this slide. But for this talk, we're really focusing on juxtarenal or suprarenal extent and unfavorable neck. Keep in mind at the very bottom the younger good risk patient and how that applies to these things as well. Here's a patient with a paravisceral aneurysm that we treated. You can see that right up at the level of the diaphragm, at the celiac and SMA level, there's aneurysmal degeneration. Clearly, the renal artery level is an aneurysm. For these, the treatment choices are an open repair using a beveled anastomosis with, or a Crawford patch and or possibly individual branch reconstructions, a formal branch graft repair, or a hybrid approach, in this case combining debranching and EVAR, would be the treatment choices we would usually consider. You've heard some other things from my colleagues here today. This would be the way that I approach this particular case. We favor a thoraco-retroperitoneal approach behind the left kidney and a beveled anastomosis to the visceral vessels and a branch to the left renal. And this has been well documented. We'll go through the data a little bit to follow. A pararenal case here, you can see really distorted anatomy as you get into the renal segment with an acute angulation. Both renal arteries are coming off, as they typically do, right where that angulation is. Here's another more classic, straighter pararenal aneurysm. You can see at the renal artery level, the aorta is clearly aneurysmal. You can see on the side a very short neck. Here's a very challenging neck and a very large aneurysm in a relatively young patient. What would you do with this patient? To me, this is a straightforward question. This patient should get an open repair with a suprarenal clamp. Here's a patient who is 59 years old. I don't know if you can see on this slide. It's a very short neck. It actually was an aneurysm that occurred after a previous open tube graft, and there's a stent graft sitting in there that hopefully one of my two colleagues didn't put in there, but this was a really bad idea. At the time that this was done, she was 59 years old, and clearly this was not going to solve her problem, so now we've just got some space junk floating in there that we need to fix. What do we do with these cases? I think the choices are an open repair with a suprarenal or supraciliac clamp. You can choose your approach. I favor a retroperitoneal approach unless it's right at the renal artery level. Fenestrated EVAR, you've heard, EVAR with snorkel grafts, branch grafts, or if you like, the Rube Goldberg hybrid approach with debranching and upside down reanastomoses. These are things we rarely do at UCSF, but I think there are indications possibly for any of these. But the treatment of choice, I think, is an open repair. So I'm not going to go through all the previous literature because there's a lot of it, but there are a few recent looks at contemporary data that I think are relevant. This one from my previous institution in Boston looked simply at the question of suprarenal clamping, which we know in the past has been associated with increased rates of perioperative mortality and morbidity. So this is a series of about 170 cases of elective suprarenal clamping for a variety of lesions. The 30-day mortality was under 2% for suprarenal clamping. There is postoperative renal impairment that you see in this case with suprarenal clamping. It was 17% compared to 9% for infrarenal. Dialysis is extremely rare. The postoperative incidence of this was clearly linked to preoperative renal dysfunction, and 5-year survival is equal for patients getting a suprarenal clamp or an infrarenal clamp in that series. Here's another series that was actually shown. This is a meta-analysis now, contemporary data in the era of people thinking about fenestration and snorkel. How good is open repair for juxtarenal aneurysms? Well, it's still extremely good. So meta-analysis of 21 studies, over 1,000 patients, perioperative mortality of about 3%. Postoperative renal dysfunction ranges quite a bit. The median was 18%, but dialysis is rare. This particular analysis includes quite a wide range of specific surgical techniques, but gives a ballpark. Here's another paper that looks at NISQIP data, contemporary NISQIP data, 3,569 repairs that are complex, which means anything at the visceral artery level. And the 30-day mortality, while looking a little bit higher, this is a very large, you know, series across a large number of centers of about 5%, I think is quite respectable. The mortality in this group was higher for patients who needed a specific visceral artery bypass. And you can see here that the odds ratios for death included the obvious ones, patients who came in very high risk, poor functional status, older patients, and particularly those with elevated creatinine baseline. And you can see on this table that these results compare pretty favorably over time. You're looking at rates of perioperative mortality for juxtarenal and suprarenal aneurysms in today's practice in experienced centers that are less than 5%. Here's the Brigham series here at 2%. How durable is it? This slide was actually already shown. This is from the MGH group. They prefer the approach I showed, the left flank retroperitoneal approach. They had data out to quite a long time, actually 4 years. Their 30-day mortality for juxtarenal repair, 2.5%. Perioperative renal insufficiency, 8.5%. Postoperative renal artery occlusion, which is a bugaboo for the other types of approaches, is very low, at least in this of those patients that they imaged, only 3%. 5-year survival was 75%. Only 2% had graft-related complications at 40 months. Fenestrated EVAR has looked pretty good in the early studies, and certainly this is a technology that is continuing to develop, and as it branches out, we'll learn more about it. The follow-up so far has been fairly limited. There are some issues. Proximal migrations that have been reported as high as 14% at 1 year. Branch vessel patency looks pretty good, but renal impairment has been reported in up to 20% of cases and about a 20% reintervention rate. We only have an approved device on the market now for a short period of time. This report came out recently in the JVS that looks at a more extensive history. Of course, these have been available outside of the U.S. for a long time and does suggest that FEVAR is feasible, safe, and can be effective in a relatively high-risk cohort of patients, which is probably where it should be limited. Reasonable results that look not that different from EVAR in terms of mortality, but the renal impairment and reintervention rates are definitely higher. Chimneys and snorkels, well, we've heard enough probably about it from Jason. He's probably the expert of anybody, certainly in this area of the country. He's done quite a lot of these. The results look reasonably safe and effective in the short term, but endoleaks are not rare. Long-term patency, sac behavior is not really clear. I think these really should largely be reserved for certain unique situations. And I would point out that at least in their first report, although we just heard some much more updated data, a 30-day mortality was no big advantage over what I showed you. In fact, it looked at least as high, and there was 25% early endoleaks. So in conclusion, I would say that the contemporary results of open repair from referral centers show mortality that's comparable to infrarenal aneurysm repair, and durability, of course, is quite good. However, the postoperative morbidity is greater than for open infrarenal repair. Increased age, baseline renal impairment, and poor functional status are risk factors that should probably lead us to think about alternative approaches. The early results of both fenestrated and snorkel are reasonable, but there are substantial rates of endoleak and reintervention, and you just heard two of the world's experts. The learning curve is significant, and the durability is not clear. So I would conclude that for most patients, particularly younger patients, those of average risk who have a pararenal aneurysm, they should get offered open repair at an experienced aortic center by an experienced aortic surgeon. It's still the gold standard. So I'll let Dr. Owens come up and take it away.
That really was a wealth of information from three very renowned and excellent surgeons. Let's go ahead and take another vote and see what you guys think. Do you think that have you been swayed? Did Ben and Jason do their jobs, or does Mike remain the king here in this? So go ahead and vote for us. All right, survey says you guys are surgeons. Right. Great.
Jason, I'm sorry you came in last, but You did the most work in the session.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.